Hello, friends, and welcome to the Reclamation Podcast. I'm your host, Megan Colleen Johnson, and I'm here to guide us in raw conversations about thriving in life and work, so that together we can step into personal agency and stop letting life happen to us. We'll cover topics like health, boundaries, communication, finances, and worthiness. That badass business you've been dreaming of, it's not so far off. The desire to wake up feeling fully alive, it's right around the corner. All right. Hello, hello, everyone. Welcome to the Reclamation Podcast. I am coming to you today from my office. As usual, I have a glass of water in front of me and it's evening. So I have my curtains closed and I just have like a soft light on and yeah, just kind of cozy. I've got a blanket. It's starting to get really chilly here. So I've got my blanket in my lap and I also have a really beautiful stack of papers in front of me, which is the first chapter of the book from today's guest. And I've got my little highlighter with some notes as well. So that's kind of where I'm coming from today. And I'd love to introduce today's guest. So Terry Connellan is an author, creative transition coach, teacher, and accredited psychological type practitioner who specializes in creativity, personality, and self-leadership, especially for midlife women in transition to a life with deeper purpose. Terry works globally through her creative business, Quiet Writing, and Wholehearted and the Companion Workbook are published by The Kind Press. So Terry, I'm so excited to have you today. And also, I think it's really fun to just say this as long as we're on here, is she's nominated as a finalist for Beautiful You Coaching Academy's. Your book is nominated. It's the product of the year. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yes, it's very exciting. Thank you.
So exciting. Yes. Yeah, so celebrating you and bringing that energy into today's call. So I think that's really beautiful as we get to talk a little bit about the book today and dive into your story. So before I get ahead of myself, where are you recording from? What do you have in front of you?
Thank you. It's lovely to be on the podcast with you today. And I live in Sydney and I live on the outskirts of Sydney and I'm in a small village surrounded by beach and bush and it's where I live and create. So where I am is in my home office, which is sort of doubles as a library. So I always feel like I'm surrounded by my virtual brain's trust, by books, by notebooks. And it's a space I love to be in, love to create from. My little white cat, Azzy's on the chair next to me. There's a candle burning. It's late, sort of late morning, and it looks like it's about to rain. So it's actually feeling lovely.
Yeah, I love that. I feel like I can kind of picture where you're at. If I'm thinking of it correctly, on your website, you have a video or the space where you can actually download the free chapter. You have a video, and I'm assuming that that's your home office that's in that video. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's sort of like a little creative cave to me, a beautiful place to coach from, to write from, and to connect with people such as yourself. It's great. I love that we can create spaces where we can gain insight and also share it with others.
Yeah, 100%. I'm a little bit jealous of all of your shelves of books as well. I think shelves like that hold, like you said, it just creates a really beautiful environment to connect with people. And I feel like you almost get to soak in some of the wisdom of the pages just being, I don't know, maybe that's just me making it up. But sometimes when I'm in a space like that, I just feel like there's something different about the essence of the room. So I really love that you have that.
Yeah, that's how I feel. And that's why I think of it as like a virtual brain's trust. I can sort of look up and see the titles and remember the impact that they had on me. You know, reach out and grab them, draw on them for inspiration, share them with others. So it's, I definitely feel that too.
So I'd love to hear a little bit. I was reading, like I said, this afternoon, a little bit about the introduction to your story. But for the listeners today, I'd love to hear, what's your story? What brought you to write this book and to start the work that you're doing now? And really, who or what did you have to reclaim to step into this space that you're in now?
I love this question. So I thought I'd start with where I am now. So I turned 60 recently in early September this year, so 2021 as we speak. And on that day, I published two books. My book, Wholehearted, which you mentioned, the Self-Leadership for Women in Transition, and the Companion Workbook that goes with it. So for me, this year has been a really exciting, pivotal year. It's interesting. It's that second Saturn return period of my life. And the work that I do now is that I'm a creative transition coach. I work with personality type in my work and I write, and I'm now a published author, which has always been a dream for me. So it feels beautiful. I work from home in a part of the world that I love, and I feel very happy in my life, but it hasn't always been that way. So what I've done over the past 5 years particularly is focus on really, you know, I sort of see it as creating my story. And I love that, you know, my work's around creating your story, your work's around reclaiming your story. And I think there's fantastic synergies between those two ways of looking at the world. Yeah, so me, it was about, I guess, reclaiming what I'd always wanted, which is to be an author, to be a published author, and also about creating a new story as a coach. And that transition happened over the last 5 years between the ages of 55 and 60. And prior to that, I was a teacher and a leader in the adult technical further education system here in Australia for 30 plus years. So a long career, half of that career in teaching and half of that career as a leader. And when you spend a long time in one place, in one organisation or in one sort of career path, even though it had lots of different iterations, my identity was very much stitched into that work. I was successful in that work and I enjoyed it for a long time. But what I really struggled with and what I sort of share in my book Wholehearted was how I struggled just to make space and time for what was really important. My number one value in life is creativity. So finding time to create, to write, was what I really was missing, and I was sort of trying to weave it in the margins of the day. So my transition was really about taking all the good things that I'd done, not leaving them behind, but taking them forward into a new way to be in the world. Another key theme for me in my life is just that making a difference in the lives of others. And I guess going into teaching is, you know, why one of the reasons you go into teaching is to make a difference in others' lives. I worked in literacy areas. So it was about working with people who had very low levels of literacy and making a difference for them. So I needed to find another way to express that, which turned into coaching. So to sort of step into the life that I wanted to live, and I didn't know exactly what it looked like before heading off, but I had a vision for what my life might be like. There was a whole lot of things you asked, you know, what did I have to do to reclaim that? Thinking about all the things I've had to do, there was a whole raft of things. But firstly, I had to turn my back in a way on a successful career, and that's really hard to do. Tap into my passions was another thing that I needed to do, and I had just needed to get back to them and work out what they were, because I think sometimes when we're working hard for others, we can lose touch with what's important for us, or it gets a bit downplayed, or we've just got to reconnect with that. I had to learn a whole lot of new skills, and particularly have that beginner's mindset, which, you know, when you're in your 50s, it can be a bit unsettling. I'm a lifelong learner. I've always embraced that, but to have to step into a whole lot of new skills can feel a bit tricky. And then probably the biggest one, which is what I share in Wholehearted, is really that all that hard inner work that you need to do when you're making a change, because the change is sort of external, but the transition is about our inner work. So all the practices, the new skills, daily routines, the tarot work that I did, the personality work. So yeah, so it's been a long journey in a way. I don't think important transitions, particularly ones involving identity, happen overnight, but I'm very happy that I went on that journey.
Yeah. It's a lot to process. And I know, like, you're kind of the word that you use in the language in your book and just what I've seen on your website is that message of wholeheartedness and returning kind of to wholeheartedness and almost creating a new version of wholeheartedness is kind of what I'm hearing. And I'm curious if you could share something that just for some reason it's stood out to me a little bit. And I think it's somewhat because of what I was reading this afternoon. Is I'm curious if you could share a little bit more about the career transition specifically, because I know, so I have a little bit highlighted here in the foreword of your book. And so you mentioned kind of in the third paragraph, so you're writing kind of in third person. So it's like, it would have been so easy in these circumstances to leave herself behind, to leave pieces of her heart on the altar of the organization, like sacrifices. And those, just some of the language that you use as you're talking about that initial transition from the workplace really hit home for me. So I'm in my current Saturn, like my first Saturn's return. So I love that you mentioned that as well. So I'm in my first Saturn's return and it's already been like a whirlwind. but I feel like that through line is true for me as well, as it's this piece of like, there's so many spaces where we can leave ourselves behind. You know, for me, that's why reclamation for me is really important. It's like, how can I reclaim the parts of me that perhaps I left on the altar of an organization or left on the altar of religion or, you know, whatever it may be. And so I'm curious if you could speak more to perhaps what you felt was left on the altar of organization or, you know, whatever resonates with you and what that transition kind of was like. Does that make sense?
Yes. And I love that. And thank you for reading my words to me. That's beautiful to hear what resonated with you. What I found when I was going through this transition time, I think because we are often looking forward to where we want to be, and particularly in that, you know, those peak times of our life when we probably know what we don't want and where we start to define, you know, I don't want this. I don't want to be doing a long commute. I don't want to be going into that office. I don't want to be doing this work anymore. But often we don't quite, you know, we're starting to pivot and we're moving forward and we might have had a particular change that's really sparked us into action. And then when we start that change, we're not always clear on what the direction is, but we focus on the forward. So for me, it was new skills, becoming a coach, becoming a psychological type practitioner, working with tarot was very important. And what I found was I actually almost shut the door, like a brick wall almost, between all those things I'd done for the past 30, 35 years, which were, you know, we talk about transferable skills often with careers, but it was even deeper than that. It's, you know, you can start to look at your CV and see what's there, but it's far deeper than that. It's, you know, for me, an example is I'd learned a lot about leadership, being in leadership roles. And then I was sort of off on my solo journey. And a really light bulb moment for me was realizing that I was taking that leadership experience and then now using it to focus on self-leadership. And I just found sometimes when we're moving to the future, we can sometimes not value our past because it's like it's the knot, it's what I don't want to be. And that idea too of when we're in transition is that idea of abandoning the success and how we defined ourselves also pops into. So it becomes a really tense time, I think, of just trying to work out, you know, what the future looks like, but also realizing that perhaps in that workplace, there's these really important pieces for me. It was particularly creativity and writing, to getting to things that were really important. So even though I enjoyed success, enjoyed my role, it was just really realizing that there was more important work for me to do in the world, and things that if I didn't get to, particularly as you start to feel time's running out as you get older, if I didn't get to those soon and start to really make this shift towards the goals that have been on my life plan for the last 5 or 6 years, then, you know, if I wasn't going to do it now, when was I going to do it? Is what I started to ask myself.
Yeah. And I'd love to, if you could kind of speak to that as well. I love that that kind of came up right at the end there. I don't often have like specific episodes where folks work with like kind of that, what do you want to call it? Like a mid-range, midlife kind of shift. And so I really love that you bring that to your work. Again, I think it's really relevant no matter what age, because you're in your second Saturn return. Is that correct? Is the second? Yeah. Because it's every 30 years.
Yeah. Mine's basically, I was born in 61. So mine's basically 55 to 60. So I guess in a way I've just gone through it.
Congrats. Congrats. You made it. So I love that, because I feel like even if you're looking at that like midlife Saturn return, I feel like there are those through lines that apply also to my Saturn return, which is really beautiful. But specifically correlating to midlife, that's what a lot of your work kind of speaks to, correct?
Yeah, because I base it on what happened to me. And I just find that in midlife, it's a time when often the things that, you know, whether it's our career trajectory, whether it's our personality, everything's starting to change and it's quite a volatile mix.
Yeah, definitely. So I'd love to then kind of turn to the primary topic. So that's the wholeheartedness and like kind of returning to wholeheartedness, reclaiming wholeheartedness. And so for you, it was reclaiming wholeheartedness in midlife. And I'd love if you could just share a little bit of what that means to you. And I know you have a lot you can say about wholeheartedness, so I'm going to just like let you run with it and then we can kind of dive more into the details.
Yes. Yeah, so wholehearted to me sometimes I find it's easy just to talk about what it's not again, that idea of what things are, what they aren't. So where I started to really realize my life was not wholehearted was when I was, you know, in the workplace feeling I wasn't aligned anymore to the work that I was doing, not feeling valued, feeling very like going into work, dragging my feet, almost feeling sick when I went to work. And that's when I found the words half-hearted, you know, my heart's not in it anymore, coming out of my mouth. And then I listened to a beautiful podcast, which was Elizabeth Gilbert talking to Mark Nepo. And she asked him to offer up a word at the end, and the word is wholehearted. And I can remember my body tingles now as I as I say that, but it was just listening to this podcast episode and the word that he offered up just totally captured everything I was feeling. And that was the point, I think, at which the threads came together. And I realized that I was on this journey to connect back with what feels wholehearted for me, what feels aligned, would be fulfilling, what's in line with my personality, and what I want to create in the world. So partly it's about legacy. It's about calling. What have we felt called to do for many years that we haven't got around to? What's got in the way of that pathway? And how can we now make a transition to feeling more wholehearted in the world, to feeling more fulfilled, and to getting to what's important to us? So in that journey, sort of the words that popped up for me, or what I found emerging for me, is creativity, self-leadership, and personality. So they're sort of three key things we can talk about as we talk through. But particularly in terms of midlife, it was about realizing how much of my identity was really defined by my work roles. And I think when we get to midlife, we start to reflect on, you know, where we've gone, what it is that we haven't got to, what's really important to us. And that impact of getting older sort of makes us think about our lives and dreams. And I agree with you, it can happen at any time in our life. It's not something that's totally the experience of midlife, and it's not something that happens to women only, but it's just a time when our identity and our confidence can really take a hit at midlife. Because for me, in the situation I was in, I found, you know, I dedicated all this time, I'd done all these unpaid hours, I filled out forms to go away on holidays. My whole life was defined by my work role. But suddenly I wasn't feeling valued. The leadership had changed, and it just made me think I'm not doing what I really want to be doing in life. But then you need to think about what that next step looks like. And it is an identity shift. You have this sense of time running out, which I still battle with all the time, that, you know, I'm too old. Why am I starting reinventing myself at this age? I could just sit back and read books and, you know, not create a business. There's lots of options. But for me, it was about, you know, how can I live in line with those values I mentioned before of creativity, of making a difference for others? And the other thing that happens at midlife, just from a personality perspective, is that, you know, we always operate out of our strengths from a Jungian psychological type perspective. You know, we use all our cognitive functions, but there's some in our personality that are not our preferred. You know, we shy away from them. We don't use them as much. We're not as skilled. And then as we get older, we start to diet. We use them more. And when we do use them, they can really help us, but they can completely throw us off balance too, because it's an area of our life that we just feel a bit lost. So, you know, Jung talks about midlife. He's sort of one of the first to really talk about the midlife crisis. And it's largely because aspects of our personality start to kick in to help us feel whole. But that whole journey can often feel quite uncertain. It's dealing with uncertainty. And it can also feel quite, it's like we're off kilter, because, and we start to think, what I've been doing, is that what I should, you know, have I made mistakes? Is some, you know, you can feel a lot of regret as well.
Yeah, that's really, really interesting. I have never heard somebody speak about it this way. And I just recently, like, I don't know that much about like Jungian archetypes and Jungian psychology. I've been like slowly like sliding down the slope. I actually was talking to some friends yesterday. I think I said I was like tumbling down the rabbit hole, like just a little bit at a time, trying to understand it a bit. So I really love that came up as well. That's really interesting that as you get older, some of those kind of hidden parts unravel themselves or unveil themselves to be witnessed, to be integrated. That gives me a lot to think about. That's really interesting. and really correlates to that wholeheartedness as well. So it's like this journey to wholeheartedness. And even if we are unaware of that in midlife, it starts to kind of unveil itself, which is really interesting based on what you're saying there.
Yes, absolutely. And it was interesting to me that the things, intuition is strong for me in my personality, the things that I intuitively reached out to do, which was three things in my transition, become a coach, learn about psychological type and become work with tarot, are all about wholeness. I didn't quite know at the time why these three things, but I had them on my wall. I had them on a whiteboard. And I've sort of realized in hindsight that they're all about integration. They're all about how we accept certain parts of ourselves that maybe are a bit unconscious and how we can get some compass and frameworks, particularly when we're going through transition, when we can get into spaces of uncertainty and feel quite lost. If we can have some frameworks like tarot, like psychological type, they can be tools, they can be like a compass to help us negotiate times of change. And I think it's because they just provide a framework of the whole. So just like if you look at a tarot deck, there's 78 cards. Some are super, super positive and inspiring, and some are like, well, here's a really shadowy part of your life you might want to look at. And it's the same with personality type. There's particular aspects we can identify as our strengths. So for me, it's introverted intuiting. And there's other aspects of our personality that are not so strong. But if we can sort of shed light on those unconscious things, then that's how we can really be whole. So in terms of the things that are not so strong for me, the big one that I've worked on in my transition and as part of, I guess, my midlife transition, it's called extroverted sensing in terms of cognitive functions. But it's about being in the moment, being in the here and now, but particularly a mind-body connection with that. So swimming for me has been a really important part of my transition because it helped me get out of my head into the here and now and just connect with being grounded, you know, right in this moment. And that's something that I think I probably haven't been good, or I know I haven't been good at doing, because I work very intuitively and I work very in an internal way. I can stay in this office for hours and not miss the outside world.
I resonate with that. I get that.
It's like a very rich inner life that can be quite compelling.
Yeah, definitely. As you were talking, something that came up for me that I was curious if you could outline it for listeners specifically, because we have a mix of folks who are kind of really into the self-help world and the psychological world, and then there's a lot of folks that are newer to it. I'm actually unfamiliar with the term psychological type practitioner, and I was curious on how does that defined? From what you're saying, I'm kind of getting a sense of it, but I was curious if you could define that first of all.
Sure. So as part of my transition, I became accredited in psychological tools. So the tool that I work with is the MAGIS personality type inventory, and there's other tools. So some people may know the Myers-Briggs indicator, it's an example, but they all go back to Jungian psychological type. So you can do this work using inventories or assessments or tools, but you can also just use it as a lens that you work through. So, you know, if I'm working with a client, I can, you know, without any, you know, going through any assessments, I can sort of start to see what psychological preferences they have. So probably some of the keys around psychological type is that we're all wired differently. You can actually look at parts of the brain using EEG and see which parts are sort of firing up when you're doing certain things. And Jung's work that he created in 1921 really shows in a very clever way how that works, but he did it on the basis of his conversations with patients. So he identified there's, you know, different ways we naturally take in the world. So just talking about myself, talked about intuition versus sensing, like outside details, two different ways. We make decisions differently. Some of us make decisions through a thinking or a logical lens. Others make decisions through a values or more feelings-based lens. Some of us are more orientated to introversion. Some of us are more orientated to extroversion. So if we can understand the way that we're wired from a psychological type personality point of view, it just provides us with some tools for looking at the things that we are really strong at, but also where our blind spots might be. So Yeah, I was on a great call yesterday. It was a training session in the psychological type sphere, and we all were looking at what our strengths were, but also the things that we just weren't so skilled at, and talking about those. And just by talking about them and getting some strategies around them in a group where everybody was doing the same thing, that was really powerful.
Yeah, that's amazing. I know I was talking to a coach a couple of weeks ago, and she utilizes the Enneagram for a similar type thing, where she's able to, based on someone's Enneagram number, kind of work with them in a similar way on essentially the gifts and the shadows of that Enneagram number. I often use, especially with my business clients, I use like human design, which is different because it's not typing per se. It's based on astrology and the I Ching and such. But I like that because it's based on conditioning. So we can kind of tell where we're maybe prone to conditioning. And again, it works. That works well with my like reclamation pieces. We're kind of reclaiming ourselves from the conditioning. But I really love what you're sharing. And it's really interesting to kind of hear how you utilize that with your clients as well. So interesting. I love it. Really good.
Thank you. And you know, they're all valid tools. They're all different frameworks that we can use. And I just work from the lens of self-knowledge. And, you know, I have my particular tools that I use and insights, which are always growing. And I know other people that, you know, work with as clients, you know, some are into astrology, some are keen to explore psychological type, others know their preferences in other ways, such as human design or their conditioning. And I think they're all beautiful tools we can use. So.
Oh, hey, it's Megan here. We'll get right back into today's conversation, but before we do, I'm here to let you know a little bit about my life coaching and creative consulting. As a coach, I work with creatives, misfits, and holy outsiders who often feel trapped in overwhelm, overgiving, and fear, but who also have a passion for doing something meaningful in the world. These folks are ready to hand back their past programming and rise as the leader of their own life. If this sounds like you and you are so ready to start your own reclamation journey, let's chat. I invite you to book a free consultation with me at my website, megscolleen.com. That's megscolleen.com. Now let's dive back into today's conversation. The other thing that I wanted you to define in how you utilize it was the tarot. So I noticed you, even in your book, you start to talk a little bit about how you were exploring the tarot, and you have a couple of the cards actually included in the beginning of the book. And you mentioned specifically the Six of Swords and the Eight of Cups. And I was curious if you could share a little bit about that and how you utilize the tarot for this journey of wholeheartedness. You had mentioned it briefly again, like I said, but I'd love if you could explain that a little more.
Yeah. So tarot was one of the three things that I wanted to work on in my transition, or my sort of my skills focus, which became my vision. And I didn't quite know why tarot was there, but I realized in hindsight that it was really about tarot became a way to tap into my natural strength, which is introverted intuiting. And I think that particular natural cognitive function and strength had sort of got a bit overshadowed by my extroverted thinking, which is my second sort of in command that I used a lot in the workplace. So this was really about getting back to what was important for me and what tapping into what my strength is, which is, you know, working with symbols, working with patterns, working with guidance that's beyond my logical frameworks, and opening myself to that more. So it's something I'd always been interested in, but I did a course with Susanna Conway, 78 Mirrors, just to get a bit of a feel for it and understand the cards. But the main thing I did was just start practicing every day. And it's something I still do just about every day now. And I share them on Instagram on stories most days. So what I found was that the actual readings each day were giving me guidance on how to negotiate uncertainty, things that are calling my attention to things that needed to become more conscious. So I think it's a great tool for tapping into the unconscious. But also it was just a way of calling my attention to things that I wasn't noticing, things I might have been missing. I started to sort of align it a bit with the moon cycles as well. So there was an awareness of, you know, how that was moving through. But what I found was these two cards kept cropping up all the time. So the Six of Swords and the Eight of Cups. So the Six of Swords is really, people often see it as a transition card. So it's no surprise that the Six of Swords started to crop up. And in most traditional sort of star decks, you'll see it as often it's a boat with a couple of figures on it, just making a journey across a body of water. And that just captured the exact feeling that I had of making this journey. David White has a book called Crossing the Unknown Sea. It's about work as a pilgrimage of identity. And that whole idea of that boat almost being the identity, making a transition from one place to another, was a really comforting image. It just reminded me I didn't have to have it all sorted out today. And it was a long-term journey. It was one that takes time, that you sort of got to honour the journey itself. So that card was so important. And the other one was the Eight of Cups. And this card, gosh, it just cropped up so often. And it's that idea, if you look at the imagery on the typical Eight of Cups, it's a figure with its back turned, and there's eight full cups sitting often in the front of the picture. And as I described about my work identity, I had to make a choice to turn my back the full cups. So on my success, on my identity that I'd built through my work. And it's that card is a really beautiful, supportive concept. And I talk about it quite a lot in the book, that idea of abandoned success, of starting afresh, but of choosing sort of to strike out for something new, to sort of have that beginner's mindset. But to realize that we're actually making a conscious decision to perhaps live a more fulfilled life, that there's something more on the horizon. We might not know what it is, but it does mean for the moment just turning our back on that particular part of our journey. And I found tarot and all those different aspects that I've just mentioned so supportive, and I find it still to every day, to just tap into what I'm feeling. And often I usually start the day with morning pages, and then I'll do the tarot work. And what I often find is what I've just written about in the morning pages gets reflected in the cards. And sometimes there's other messages too, sort of reflecting back on what I've just written about. So just as part of a wholehearted life, those concepts of working with tarot to help us shed light on whatever it is we're going to on a bigger scale, but also in the day-to-day, have just been so powerful for me. And I that's what are some of the things I take people through in wholehearted, just how those practices can be so powerful.
Yeah, 100%. I know I don't know a ton about tarot, but I do often pull a tarot card in the morning along with my journaling as well. And I find it really supportive in a similar way. Again, I don't have the full knowledge of the deck as well, so I often am like Googling, what does this card mean? But I always find so much brought to like bubbles to the surface that I would not have necessarily come to on my own. I shouldn't say that. Kind of like what you were saying. So sometimes you write something and then the card comes up. I feel like it's more like that, but I wouldn't have necessarily seen the messages in what I was writing. And then the card is almost kind of like, hey, here you go. Like, here's something that you can actually pull from all of the many things that are simmering in your brain. And I feel like it's just so powerful to have those different tools that allow us to see ourselves through a different lens. I think that's how I look at it anyways.
Yes, I love that. And the sea imagery keeps, which is why there's a shell on the front of my book, the sea imagery of like crossing the water, getting, having a compass for your travels. I just see them as tools to help us on that sort of crossing the water journey that can help us to, find out which way to turn, when we need to stop and rest and put the anchor down. They're frameworks and they're tools. And as you're saying so beautifully there too, I think it's that shining a light on whatever is just below the surface of our days. When we're busy, when we're trying to achieve things, we can, get into that, again, that forward looking and, getting frustrated with ourselves because we're not moving fast enough. But if we just have that quiet moment to tap into what is just beliefs, the surface of our consciousness, or as you just said, there might be a few of them, but which one do we really need to listen to now? That's really helpful.
Yeah. What's coming to mind as well, what you're sharing is it's almost an invitation into embodiment and connection to our intuition, like in a simple form. These are tools, especially in the world we live in today, we can be so disconnected from our body. And I know you mentioned like you have different practices now to kind of ground you and such, but almost these other pieces as well, they're all invitations back to yourself to kind of reground It's just different ways to do that, which is really beautiful.
Yes. And I think people need to find their own ways. I offer up what works for me, and people may find those practices helpful for them too. But I think it's also really important for people to explore the tools that might work best for them. I'm certainly not being prescriptive in what I suggest. I try and share my experiences, what helped me, but also that encourage people to open the door to what might work best for them, what's going to ground them, you know, what morning practices might work well for them. Because, you know, we're all different. We all have different personalities. We all have different conditioning and cultural influences. So whatever it is, I think I offer up, you know, 15 wholehearted self-leadership skills that work for me, but I think that's a list that can be added to infinitely as we, you know, create a toolkit that works for us individually or collectively.
Yeah, 100%. I love that. And I feel like this actually lends itself beautifully to empowering tips. Like I feel like we're already edging our way into that. So I'm curious, first of all, is there anything that you feel like you want to speak to from just wholeheartedness and reclaiming wholeheartedness before we move into the empowering tips?
I think just that idea of seeing it as it's not a sprint. It's a marathon journey, and whatever we define as being wholehearted or as the next step for us on the journey often evolves. And I think one of the biggest challenges of going through the, you know, a whole journey to wholeheartedness or to reclaiming what's important for us is it requires going through uncertainty and it requires patience. So just encourage people, I think, particularly if they're embarking on that or feel like they're in the middle of that journey, to just feel heartened that it's okay if it takes time, and to be self-compassionate about that, because there's no rush. It's important work. It's hard. I often talk about hard inner work. It takes time. It's not a click your fingers situation. And often we just want to rush it, and we want to be there, and we want, you know, all the clients and the books out and the, you know, to be in that different location now. But I guess it's just encouraging people to sit with the journey and the time that it can take, and to just take comfort and enjoy the process as well as getting to the final outcome.
Yeah, 100%. As we're recording this, it's in the month of November, and this month is actually, for a lot of my content, the theme is being is your superpower. And I feel like that feels really relevant to this. So like just that idea of really being present to the now. You're on the journey, and each thing can, you know, we can take a step at a time, essentially. I think we all need to hear that message more often in our modern world.
And it's something I struggle with still every day, and have, you know, my morning pages are full of it. You know, I want to do this, I want to do that, but I've just step by step, baby steps, just do this. And, you know, you've got to remind yourself too how much you have achieved, not always what you haven't.
Totally. Yeah. Creative brains, though, you know, they've always got ideas. You can't, you got to roll with it too. So then, what are three empowering tips for the audience members today, for folks listening?
Loved thinking about this idea. And the first tip I would recommend, I thought I'd just structure it around the three things I work on: self-leadership, personality, and creativity. So the first one's about self-leadership, and it's a mindset shift. So a really powerful thing is to remember that change is external and transition is internal. Taking that mindset shift into account of we're not the change. We might choose to initiate the change. Change might happen to us, but what we can control and what we particularly can work on is the internal work of how we lead ourselves through that transition. So those words landed with me through reading something on the web, made a huge difference to me, and it just made me realize that I'm choosing part of this change. Some of it's happened to me. My workplace has changed. I was made redundant. I can feel all these things, and I can also sort of get lost in the feeling, but I can choose to practice the self-leadership to manage the transition and the internal changes, what I can control.
I really love that distinction. I've never heard it stated that way before. That's really beautiful.
I find it really helpful, and that's why in my work And in the book, I use the word transition because it's that, again, it's that idea of journey, transiting from one place to another, and what we can do to navigate through that. You know, some of the tools and compasses we talked about on the way through, the frameworks. But just, you know, just as I know I've seen on your website, you know, that idea that you can be an active participant, you can be the author of it. You don't have to just sit back and let it happen to you. The second one, sort of related to personality and self-knowledge, is, I mean, and the, you know, if it's something we can do today, the top tip I would say is just take some time to have a think about your strengths and also have a think about your less preferred areas. So it might be, you know, here's my top three strengths, here's three things I'll run a mile from, or things I know I'm not so crash hot at. And just to use that as a lens generally on working with our gifts, but also being self-compassionate, because none of us are good at everything. You know, they're not all strengths for us. There's, you know, strengths are strengths for a reason. And then have a look at perhaps, you know, what tools, such as some of the examples we've talked about today, can help you to develop that knowledge in a really practical way, so that you've got a bit of structure for looking at the self-knowledge about how you're working, particularly if you're making a change across an area that feels uncertain. If we know we can rely on our strengths, we can develop them. But if we can also just realize that the things we're not so strong on, we can develop, we can partner with other people who are good at that. We can choose to work on them ourselves. There's lots of things we can do, but just becoming self-aware is a great first step. And again, something we can do today just to simply tap into that.
Yeah, definitely. I know something around that that's been really helpful for me. I feel like often when I think of my shadow self, I tend to, so I came from the lens previously of evangelical Christianity, where it was like, there's like good things and then there's sins. And so I felt like for me, a lot of my shadow was like less presentable parts or suppressed parts versus, I think in other spheres, I hear it more often where it's, you know, the maybe not like we have our strengths and then we have things maybe we're not as strong on. But the way that I think about it then is like, if my quote unquote sins or my less presentable parts, what if I invite them to the table? What if I give them space to speak? What do they have to tell me and teach me about myself once we're kind of all at the same table? So I don't know if that resonates at all. But that's something I think for me, whenever I think of my shadow self, I'm kind of like, come on, shadow self, like come and have a seat at the table. Like, let's have a chat. What do you have to teach me today? Because they were previously parts of me that were not considered good. And so I feel like they have a lot to share. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah, I love that. And I love that idea of, you know, that's often the devil card is the card that comes to mind too. It's that idea of, you know, part of the first step is just shedding light on whatever it is that, you know, whether it's seen as a sin or whether it's something that you just don't like doing. In psychological type, it's more about preferences. So I think, again, they're just different ways of talking about similar things. But it's a preference, you know, I have a preference for this particular way of working and I don't prefer that. And it's actually really hard for me to naturally do that. And then that's also a great lens on how those self-sabotaging behaviors come in, because sometimes it can be our strengths in overdrive because we rely on them so much. We rely on them. And then if we don't get our way, we just keep keep relying on them. For our less preferred areas, it's just, you know, a bit of a blind spot or something that we just know we're just not so skilled in. And unless we can get conscious about it, like you say, invite them to the table to have that discussion, in whatever shape or form that happens, they can blindside us. They talk in psychological type about being in the grip with those, they call them inferior functions. And they're like cognitive functions that cause us stress. And we, you know, when we sort of, often when we do things that we know are not our best behavior, there's often a pattern to them. And we can look at that and go, that's because of that. I'm just not so good at that particular thing. So it might be, you know, working with emotions, or it could be thinking logically, or it could be working with intuition, or it could be working with the here and now. But whatever it is, it's just a bit of a blind spot. So by shining a light on it, it's a great first step.
Yeah, definitely. I love that. Beautiful. So good. I love these conversations.
Me too. It's the best thing about podcasts, isn't it? It's just fantastic.
Yeah.
The third one is about creativity, and it's to honor creativity in your life. And I think what I've found through my own experiences and through working with other people is that creativity and self-expression is so important, and it's often the reason why we're looking for change. So it might be writing, it might be art, it might be new skills, it might be, you know, something we've always wanted to do, we haven't got to. But in my story and in the stories of the women in my community who've written blog posts, who I interview and chat with, creativity is a theme. So I just encourage people to tap into that, the wisdom of whatever creative urges are there, and make time for them. They often, you know, a bit like when I was engaging with tarot, I can remember battling because I kept thinking, why am I wasting my time with this? This is a frivolous activity. And often that can happen when we're doing something really important, less valued and less understood in our world. Like often creativity generally is, you know, as a skill or as a profession is undervalued. But making time for the writing, for the intuitive work, for the art, whatever it might be, I just think is an incredible source of growth and insight. So just encourage people just to take a few minutes a day to think about how they can honor creativity in their life.
Yeah, I love that. I actually had two things come up as you were talking about that too. So the first one was, I love that you use the language frivolous kind of to describe how your experience with the tarot at first. One of my coaches, I think a number of years ago, she asked me, I don't even remember what the context was necessarily, but essentially I had labeled something as frivolous. And she was like, do the frivolous thing, go for the frivolous thing. Cause usually there's stories around, oh, this is too frivolous, or I can't buy this because it's, you know, too over the top. And she was like, no, do that. That's your edge. Let's go there.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And that's exactly how I felt. And just some of the women that I've, you know, stories, because I have women writing their stories on my website, and it's fascinating just to see how much creativity becomes a saving life aspect sometimes, a form of expression, a reason for being, but it's just a constant theme. I love that tapping, you know, listen to the frivolous. That's great.
Yeah, so good. I love it. The other thing that came up, it was funny. One of my coaches this afternoon, actually, she was talking about hobbies and earlier this week. So I'm having some health stuff. So I'm like dealing with a little bit of fatigue and some migraines. And so I've been having to take up hobbies that are not my work, which I love my work and it's often on screen. And so I've been having to find some other fun things to do, kind of return to some of my artsy fun things that I like to do. And I decided to pick up weaving this week. So there we go. I'm working on step three already. I'm integrating some weaving. Doesn't look pretty yet, but I'll hope that it gets there.
Oh, I love that. And it just makes you think about what, you know, what weaving might be a metaphor for in your life, doesn't it?
I love that. I'm gonna have to think about that. Amazing. Well, I'm sure these are going to be incredible tips for the folks listening. And I just really appreciate you for sharing them. So it's amazing. Is there anything else, any loose strings that you want to tie up before we move into wrap-up questions?
No, I think I'm ready to go for the wrap-up questions.
All right. So then what is one way you slow down amidst our busy world?
Swimming has been the big, big, big one for me about how I slow down and how I have navigated this whole process of change. And you know, getting back to swimming, it's something I've loved in my life when I was younger. But you know, being busy, being in a corporate or educational workplace, I didn't have much time for exercise. I didn't have much time for anything really apart from work. And what I found when I started this time of transition was I worked with a coach, with my buddy coach actually at Beautiful You. And in that pairing, the goal I worked on was about how I could feel fitter and healthier, sexier. And swimming came up in that. And it's been a lifesaver because, well, one, I'm so much fitter. So I live near the sea. I swim in the ocean 3 times a week, about a kilometer and a bit each time. And the best thing about that is when I get in there, my mind is just completely free. And the other thing is it taps into that extroverted sensing I mentioned earlier, that balancing myself with my what's not so strong for me, which is being in the water, feeling the water on my skin, not being in my head. And it's just been such a beautiful grounding and balancing practice.
Yeah, that's amazing. It's so funny. I actually know a number. I feel like because so many of you Australians live near the coast, I know so many folks that they're like avid swimmers in Australia. And I'm like, that sounds amazing. I have a lake nearby, but it's now going into wintertime. So that will definitely be frozen soon. But it's really beautiful to just hear that. And I know that's a similar experience whenever I get a chance to swim. But I think that's a funny thing. I know at least 3 Australians, I feel like, that are like, swimming is their thing. So I love that.
Yeah, it's a great thing to do.
Totally. And then who are a couple humans you deeply admire or folks you are currently learning from?
I love this question. It really made me think. And there were so many people came to mind. But I thought most or top of mind of the people in my own community that I've created through my quiet writing business. And many of the people I've connected with, as I'm connected with you through social media, they're not people I've met in person. And I've just started a podcast, the Create Your Story podcast, and that's where I'm having conversations with people about learning from each other and how we've connected and, you know, how we've influenced each other on this journey. And the first person that came to mind is Penelope Love. And Penelope was the editor of my book. So she first received the draft of Wholehearted, which was a very, very long 100,000-word draft. And she received that and, you know, very much has become a soulmate. And she told me early on in that journey, I think you have 2 books here. And we shared a sacred writing journey of taking that very long draft, shaping it into 2 books that it's now published by the Kind Press. I reached a point in my writing where I just didn't have the skills to do the next step. So that collaboration, that reaching out to someone else, which wasn't the easiest thing to do. And I'm just so grateful for Penelope's editing, her skills and her publishing experience, which just gave me what I didn't have on that journey. So yeah, we've had a beautiful, soulful partnership grown through that process and beyond. And the other person that came to mind as so important now is Beth Cregan, who's my morning writing buddy. So we support and we inspire and we virtually sort of co-create with each other most mornings, about 4 to 5 mornings a week at 6 o'clock. So we get up, we hop on Zoom. Beth lives in Melbourne, I live in Sydney. And we get a cup of tea and we start writing at 6 o'clock in the morning and write for 25 minutes, have a chat for 5 minutes, write for 25 minutes. And, you know, we think of writing as a solo activity, but the crafting that collaborative connection on writing has just been so powerful. And our conversations are so rich and we just learn from each other so much. So yeah, that's 2 people who've been amongst many, many who've been really important to me, who came to mind about who I'm currently learning from and who I really admire and who inspire me each day.
I love that so much. And I really love that a lot of times when folks speak to this question, they share folks, there's nothing like good or bad or anything about this, but a lot of times folks share people that they admire that they don't actually have personal relationship with, you know, like it's someone who wrote a book that they don't know, or someone they follow on social media that they don't know personally, which is, you know, beautiful. And I really love that you shared 2 people that you have such a close relationship with and who inspire you on such a deep level. And that's such a beautiful bond that you have as well with that writing partner, where you actually, like, it's like a practice, like almost like, you know, meditation or yoga. You get up every morning and have this writing practice and you have this person who's on the journey with you and that you both kind of support one another. That's so beautiful. I love it. Thank you for sharing that.
No, it's great. Thank you. And we've both been writing a book. Beth's book comes out next year. So just the fact we're going on the same journey together too. It's been a real realization for me that writing is a collaborative and a community effort. It's not a solo effort.
Yeah. So much of creativity is that, but I think sometimes I don't know why it is. We often think of, we work solo, but creativity wouldn't happen without community in a lot of ways. So that's something I'm going to have to be thinking on. I love it. So good. And then how can we find and support you online?
Oh, thank you for this question. I love the idea of supporting me online. It's a beautiful way to ask this question. So I am at quietwriting.com. So that's my website. And that's the hub where you can find out about my books, Wholehearted and the companion workbook. And I've just created a podcast, so the Create Your Story podcast. So episode 2 was just released yesterday. So early days, but it's very exciting. So the links are there for that. And there's a free resource. You can get chapter 1 of Wholehearted there if you want to find out a little bit about what the book's like.
Amazing. And we will have all of those links in the show notes, which is wonderful. So everyone can connect with you. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the episode as well, I highly recommend downloading the first chapter of your book and diving into this beautiful work of art that you've created and sharing your story so that others can have a guide on their journey as well. So thank you so much for being here and for sharing your story today.
Thank you so much for this beautiful, rich conversation. I've thoroughly enjoyed every minute, and I hope it's really helpful for members of your community and people listening today. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining me for this episode of the Reclamation Podcast. I hope it served you on your own reclamation journey, and know that I am rooting for you all the way. If you are desiring support on your journey, head to megscolleen.com. That's megscolleen.com to learn more about me and my current coaching offerings and availability. If you want to learn more about the show guests, head to the show website, thereclamationpodcast.com. And last, but definitely not least, if you found value in the show, sharing this episode with friends and posting a quick review is always appreciated. As always, reclamation is yours.